NZ.
Auckland Grey Power is pleased to sponsor this edition of Senior Focus.
Welcome everyone to this session of Senior Focus, and I'm Anne-Marie Khoury. I'm your presenter today, and on my mind is the continuing celebration of Matariki, the festival, and what's out there and what's being enjoyed and what's coming up. And also, I've returned from the local government conference in Wellington this week. So it's been a very seminal conference, a very special occasion where some landmark awards were given and where some recognition of things Māori was on the agenda, and very provocative speakers. So I have a lot to share, and I will also be doing a future program with another local board member from Auckland who was at the conference, because I think that there are deeper topics to explore. So right now, I don't know where you're at with Matariki, whether it's grown on you and whether you've experienced anything neat or different, but it is celebrated in slightly different ways in different parts of the country. Each iwi has its own take on Matariki, its own stories and so on. And so I think the place that it holds in our calendar is getting stronger each year, and the number of events is growing. And the last program I interviewed one of the principal communicators about Matariki from the council, just to get a flavour of what was out there. But this time it'll be a little bit more personal, I think, because Matariki is a time of reflection. It's a time of remembrance and a time of renewal. And so in that, you tend to be inward thinking, and you tend to dig deep and think about people who've passed on and their legacy, what you owe them, and what you would like to see happen next. And for me, of course, I spent some 25 years living in Wellington, and I did a lot of moving and shaking in those times. And some 30 years ago, we had a landmark decision of the Court of Appeal over the role of the treaty in government affairs, and in particular the transformation of the SOE Act to recognise the treaty. And that brought about a whole transformation in the way things Māori got incorporated into communications. So I was involved with a communications training business that enabled people to develop skills in this area. And now I see what's happening at Auckland Council, and it's very similar to that time 30 years ago, except people have moved on in the whole of New Zealand, and of course we've had successful Māori television, successful Māori films, and so the awareness of things Māori is different, and the acceptance and the flourishing of the rau is something that we're now experiencing with most of the classes that I know of in Auckland, whether they are free classes held through a library, or whether they're through the Wānanga or Aotearoa, or whether they're paid classes. They seem to be pretty well full with waiting lists. And that's certainly true in places like Devonport, but even across the Isthmus, there's huge demand for people to learn. One of the oldest people I've heard of taking it up is somebody 98 who was surrounded by the language for many years working in Māori affairs, but never actually mastered much more than Kia Ora. And he's now learning at 98. So, you know, never give up. There's always hope and there's always opportunity. And it's surprising when you learn a language what it does, how it opens up your whole awareness to a different way of thinking. And I remember learning French at school, but that was quite a painful process because we didn't have really good speakers around us, so we didn't actually hear it spoken enough to get really fluent and really competent. And it was a struggle, although I was very good at reading in French and read Albert Camus, the novelist. But these days, I really delight in trying to use as much of the reo that I've got as I can. And also, when I'm involved in citizenship ceremonies, which I am in my local board area, I do use greetings from as many different countries as I can master on the occasion. So we can have 100 people a night coming through getting their citizenship, and that might be that up to 44 different countries are represented. And so it's quite a challenge, but I set the bar high because I believe that we need to signal to people that their own language is important to them, it's their part of their identity, and we respect them for that. So it's the same whether the person is Māori or whether the person is from another country. In my book, it's part of going the extra mile and developing a more empathic relationship with a person. And the key to it is the language. So, but it's also a way of having fun. And when you can make a joke in another language and when you can actually have a tease about a word, that's when it really gets interesting. And it's sparks off a lot of enjoyment amongst the people that are doing the communicating. So it's all about having fun. It's not to be something to beat yourself up about. Now, this year, Matariki opened with a very special ceremony in the domain, which I attended, with the Māori King and the Mayor. And that was an extraordinary event in itself. It brought about the recognition, I suppose, that Tainui, Waikato, Iwi have had a very strong relationship with Auckland and still do. And so as the host Iwi for the event, of course, the Māori King came and there was quite an entourage of elders from the Waikato there to sing their ancient waiata, waiata that you wouldn't normally hear. So that in itself was quite magnificent. Also, I think the whole atmosphere of the pre-dawn gathering with hot chocolate and coffee and whatnot, and the walking up the hill silently with the several hundred in the dark, and reaching the small hillock, Pukekaua, that's just southwest of the museum itself in the domain. And on that spot, Princess Tapuia had designated a sacred site many, many years back, and it was in front of that site that we gathered. So from that occasion, afterwards filing down the hill and having breakfast and actually enjoying the networking with the various people that I knew from around the region, I got a sense that this was a new style of Matariki on the move, Matariki growing our awareness and consciousness about different iwi, different iwi's contribution to education, different stories, different skill bases that they want to enhance and develop, and different ways of working with agencies and government departments over various issues. So it was a time of gathering, a time of sharing, and a time of strengthening the bonds, if you like, between peoples who are collaborating and who are setting a vision for moving forward. And it was on that note, with all that energy behind me, that I went to the local government conference in Wellington. And in going there, I wasn't going as a representative of the particular local board that I'm on. I was going there using my professional development money, which is part of my honorarium. And I thought it was very fitting to use it, because I'd been at a local government conference 2 years ago, and they're always a great litmus test about what's happening in councils up and down New Zealand. You've got mayors from the various councils, you've got councillors from the different councils, you've got some council staff in planning and policy, and of course people from community boards and people from local boards in Auckland. So it's a great cross-section of the local government sector, and it's interesting what is selected as the main focus. So 2 years ago, the main focus was the three waters, and the concept that, you know, you had your storm water and you had your drinking water and you had your wastewater, and you actually needed to be looking at how they were managed, and they, of course, need very careful management, and lots of issues arising even 2 years ago as to how, not only how can you measure, but how can you prevent sudden reduction in water quality, and how can you sustainably manage some of these issues rather than having big rates, blowouts and so on. So I looked to see what the program would bring this time, and it seemed that it was a challenging program. There were people deliberately selected as speakers to be provocative. There were people from different backgrounds, not just people inside local government. And we started with a challenge from Dame Tariana Turia, and she said, things must change. And that was her refrain. And what she was alluding to was Māori have been shut out of local government decision-making very often, or they've been tacked on at the end, they've been consulted at the last minute, and all this sort of thing is just now no longer acceptable. And the young people coming through, the young Māori are articulate and well-versed in the law, and they are not going to put up with this sort of nonsense. So she was very strong about this. And she said, we must start with even small things, just, you know, thinking about what particular small things you can change on a day-to-day basis. Don't wait for some big wave of change. And I thought that was really interesting way to put it, because very often we think, oh, well, someone else will do that, or I don't want to single anybody out, so I won't speak up. I myself have begun to notice some strange spellings, Māori words misspelt in prominent communications, and I'm thinking, well, how did that get through there? How did that happen? Now I'm actually thinking, listening to Tariana's words, it might be something I need to do something about, not leave it for someone else. And then I hear people actually referring to people, to others, and because that person is Māori, they're introducing them in a Māori fashion, but they're saying motua instead of mātua. Or they're just actually being sloppy, but they don't realise that they are being sloppy. They haven't put enough time into getting things correct. And if that was English and there was an English equivalent, I mean, people would laugh and nobody would take them seriously. But because it's Māori, they think it doesn't matter so much. So I think it's important to realise that when our journalists can say Pepinyong, when there's an accident and an Air New Zealand plane goes into the sea, yeah, they have to practice, but they get it right. Pepinyong. It's, you know, it's not that difficult. So in the same way, there should be the same sort of professionalism going into how we pronounce Māori. Now, what surprised me also at this conference was the technology and the way technology was used. I mean, apart from the fact that it was the most gigantic screen I've ever seen that the presentations went on, certainly the widest. I think it even surpassed Sky City's screen. And this was in the TSB arena where we were down on the Wellington waterfront. And Wellington knows how to do waterfronts, how to entertain and how to provide things for us that will satisfy people. And when you think about it, Wellington waterfront used to be full of cars and containers and whatnot. And it's just totally different environment these days. It's a wonderful place to be. So at the TSB Arena, looking at this great huge widescreen and seeing the way Māori greetings, Māori waiata, karakia was all woven in to the program in a seamless and just natural way. So there was no stultification and nobody was uptight about anything and people just flowed through. So by the end of the conference, when at the awards dinner, we had a number of really fantastic presentations of councils and their staff who'd won awards for doing things that were exemplary actions in local government. Things like the communications strategy that was used in Waipa to tell the stories, Māori and Pākehā stories, about the history of the area, and to actually do it in a way so that there was belongingness evocative of everybody, so people felt included. There were examples from one end of the country to the other of tremendous efforts to improve the environment. And then there were people who were signalled out. And one person in particular, of course, had a fantastic ovation, had a Māori salute in the form of a great whai kōrero and by Glenn Wilcox, and erupting into a stupendous effort at waiata from all the local government representatives from Auckland. And this person was Penny Hulse, Councillor Penny Hulse. So in all her time, 27 years in local government, and her service to Local Government New Zealand, her being on the Local Government Council and so on, just culminated in this award. And it was wonderful to be there, because knowing that Penny has championed so many issues that weren't necessarily popular, so many issues that were justice issues. For example, Auckland Council not having a seniors panel in 2010 and the lobbying and hard work that went on to get that, but it was Penny's leadership that saw it happen in the end in 2013. And so we have to be very mindful of the fact that seniors have a voice and can advise council through the seniors panel, and that's partly due to the leadership of Penny Hulse. Now, we also recognise that there were other people involved in all of that, but it just takes somebody at the council table to put their hand up and take the action. Just a little bit like what Tariana said. If you want things to change and you have a vision of how they might be, then it's what little steps, what next steps do you need to put in place to get there? And that's how Penny was thinking, and I think that epitomised her style. She went with the flow, but she also was prepared to step out in front when it was needed. So the overall feeling at the conference, I think, was one of, it was a, one of the better conferences to go to. Dave Cull, the president of Local Government New Zealand, he was very pleased with the feedback he was getting during the conference. And in terms of the provocations, I think a lot of them were how to lead. What does leadership mean? Leadership in terms of your community, when you've got a lot of vastly different people who could be in conflict with each other. What does leadership mean when you know that in 30 years' time we're going to have some serious repercussions flowing on from climate change? Even if some of your people don't believe in climate change, don't believe it's happening. What does leadership mean when you have huge inequalities and you have people who can't afford to use the public transport, people who are staying home all day because they feel discriminated against, they don't like people making nasty comments towards them as they walk down the street? What does leadership mean when people are in smaller and smaller homes, paying higher and higher rents, and they don't have natural gathering places, and they can't afford to belong to clubs and organisations because that just costs too much? So in the whole arena of local government, if council's focused only on rubbish and rates and roads, there would be so much that wouldn't ever get tackled, wouldn't ever see the light of day in terms of council decisions. And what an appalling kind of result we would end up with. Every council has got some homelessness crisis of some sort and to some degree throughout the country. So the levers for housing and changing the housing landscape are very important. Even though local government doesn't have control of those, it has to deal with the fallout. So on the day where we went workshopping, looking at things that are being done in Wellington, some of us went to look at a new block of flats which had been built as a Housing New Zealand lease from the Wellington City Council, who owned the land and so on. It was a very interesting arrangement because one of the flagship beauties of this apartment complex, and it's social housing, so it's people who wouldn't, it's subsidised and they wouldn't normally be able to afford the rents in the private sector. These people are living where their communications wiring through the building is done in groups, and that means there can be isolation in terms of fire, and but also in terms of intercom, swipe cards, and generally controlling crime in the building. The difference that has made in terms of the quality of this design and in terms of the way the alarming system works and the swipe card system works and so on, the difference is just enormous. The police have not been there in 12 months since it opened. There hasn't been any need for them, no call-outs. Whereas previously, the older apartments that were on that site that had to be demolished, they were just a constant headache. There was rat running. There was just this constant difficulty the police had of isolating violence and crime and finding people and having any sort of sense of control over the environment. So that shows that councils have a huge part to play in terms of how they work with developers, what kind of environment is created for people to live in, and what sort of positive or negative effects come from that. So it was a very worthwhile visit. And in addition, we heard from people who run the City Mission and people who are involved with the Housing New Zealand future plans and so on. So we got a very good insight into some of the factors that make for success when you're trying to cope with the fallout of the homelessness. I was very impressed, and I look forward to seeing what more can be created here in Auckland through developing conversations with community providers here. I think our community provider sector is picking up the pieces, and they're housing quite a lot of homeless people, and they're doing very well. They need more support from government, but they are innovators, and it's the innovation that we need. Just business as usual won't cut the mustard. And I guess that was one of the sub-themes of the conference, that if we go on doing what we've always done, we'll get what we've always got, only worse, and it won't meet the needs as the impact of climate change and other issues are coming at us far too fast. We've got to move quickly and swiftly to tackle things. And so we were looking at not only water quality this time, but we were also looking at sea level rises, and even we saw a slides of the Antarctic and the poles from the air, and looking at the changes that are going on. And those changes are going to change the weather patterns, the seasons, and ultimately they'll be behind the deluges of rain that we get, and things that will lead to flooding and people being evacuated from their homes. So we got a really comprehensive overview of just how difficult our future is, and how much work is needing to be done in terms of preparation, and how quickly we need to get on to it. So that was the real value of the conference, that it sharpened minds and it brought people together to realise we're all in this together. Everybody in the country has got to face this, and it, really, because we're not going to be able to run away. We can't go to another planet. We have no other means of dealing with this. We can't put our heads in the sand and pretend it's not happening. So it was very salutary. And on this note, I'd like to switch to a track. It's one of my favourites of a Māori album of New Zealand artists, and I hope you enjoy.
Tare wāna te ki ana i te tai. Oe, no tare wāna maha ngā kōranga. O tia, ko tū te arai, ma te whakapono aue a. No tare wāna te ki ana i te riri. Oe, no tare wāna whai wā i te ngā koe. O tia, ko tū te arai, ma te whakapono aue a tai. Ki hea hare ai, taku toi ora, moio aku i koe. E aha ta taku toi ora, moio aku ki tenga. Ua pai, ki te iho, ki te o. Kwa te wāwe ki te ara. Nō tāre wāna me he manu kore o mai ata. Nō tāre wāna.
Get to
together with Senior Focus next Sunday at 5:25 p.m. on Planet FM 104.6 or listen online at any time at planetaudio.org.nz/seniorfocus, and do note Senior Focus